Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 7th of February. I've lost all track of time, ladies and gentlemen. It's Friday. Not yet. It's Wednesday, the 7th of February, and it's a snowy day, and it's very nice to have you with us. We've been in fun drive mode for a couple of days, so we're back, and we couldn't be more thrilled. We'll properly thank you in just a moment. Let me just go around and get to everybody here and introduce you to our panel. We were out yesterday. We were out the day before, so it's very good to be back. We have a lot of good stuff to talk about because, you know, if you let 2 days go by, a lot happens. So we have things to talk about. We have to get ready for the parade. Hey, Libby Post is here. She is a political consultant, and we love having her. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine.
Mazel tov on such a fast, fun drive, although it... I know it.
No, you know, it's great. You had the lockbox and the thing.
The crescendo was terrific.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We have Teresa Bourgeois here. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
I am delighted to be here, and I echo congratulations to all of you here and all of the listeners who are part of the community.
Very nice to have you with us. And Jen Smith is here. She is a Berkshire Eagle reporter extraordinaire, and we are thrilled to have Jen with us. Good morning.
I am thrilled to be here and also thrilled at the news of the Fun Drive.
Well, it's very cool news, isn't it, Dr. Alan Chartok?
It is, and I have to say I'm in an undisclosed location this morning speaking to you, and Jen makes me ashamed because she got there and I didn't.
Yeah, I was scolding her, asking her what the heck she's thinking.
Yeah. The cat's out of the bag. Now my mother knows I'm here.
I don't mean anything mean by this. All I have to say is, though, but she hasn't gotten home yet. So getting here was easy. It's getting home is the hard part.
Well, she is the best, and we truly all love her for doing all of this for us. And thank you, Jen. Really great. And thank you, Libby and Teresa. You're all wonderful.
All right. Well, let's get started. We've got a lot to talk about. And again, we just want to thank you. It was a wonderful, fun drive. It was very lovely, very satisfying, and thrilling. And thank you very, very much from the bottom of our heart.
And Joe, if I may just say, as long as we're thanking people, I want to thank you personally. Because what you did in this fun drive was extraordinary. You're setting up with the partnerships you're handling, first with Sarah in the morning and then with Selma in the afternoon and being on the air. It really was something to behold. And the money that came in while you were on was just phenomenal. And well, I want to thank you.
Well, thank you. And right back to you. You know, when you came up with, when you said, oh, let's do this as a $2 million fun drive, I think some eyebrows were raised, but you always had the confidence. And And we did it, and you commanded that ship beautifully as far as getting us into the port, not only fully intact but also well on time. So that's a lovely, lovely accomplishment.
Yeah, when you think David Gustina was saying to me this morning, can you imagine when I first started here, it was $100,000 fund drive.
Yeah, I was 150 when I started. David
was 150,
yeah.
And I think you guys probably started about the same time.
Yeah, they were a little bit longer than me. Yep, go ahead.
And it took, 14 days to do it. And here this thing happens in a day and a morning. It is just too much to really understand, but it's just wonderful. And, you know, it all comes down to the people who are a part of our community. That's what it is. It isn't us nearly as much as it is the wonderful understanding on the part of all the people who are on the other side of the radio.
You know, it's amusing because I was looking at Facebook and Twitter last night, and 99% of the things are very nice. 99% of the comments are nice. But then there's like that 1% that's just, yeah.
And by the way, it isn't 1%. It's 1% of 1%. Yeah. Here's a rule in life. Ready? There's always a stinker.
Yeah. And of course, those are the ones that you just, you know, make you spit soup out of your ears
or your nose.
Or,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
really.
I don't know. Yeah. So, they, The comment was, oh, well, you know, they had the lockboxes and they say it only did it in 2 days and everything. I'm thinking, okay, but we still made $500,000 in 2 days.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
Like, that's, you know, in the old days, that, I mean, that's still, it's $500,000. Mm-hmm. And overall, and we did that on top of having already made $1.5 million. All I'm doing is saying thank you to the wonderful listeners and to everybody who supported us and allowed us to do that. They're the ones who deserve all the credit.
So. And you know, Joe, every time I say to Roselle, look at what the stinker wrote. And by the way, it's three or four. That's what it is out of the tens of thousands of people who put something in and who listen. And Roselle always says, you know, basically, grow up. You know,
yeah.
Ignore them. Don't talk about them. Don't give them that satisfaction.
Well, we are only going to be happy today, and that is we are very grateful, and no sour grapes here. So thank you very much for everything. We are thrilled. We're back. We'll shut up for a while about 1-800 numbers and asking for money and all that good stuff, and we'll get to what we do on the show, which is talk about issues and talk about what's going on in the world. We have a wonderful panel to do that with. Let us begin with the budget deal. Do we have one, or is the president trying to sabotage it? Trump, President Trump, threatens the shutdown as negotiators close in on a budget deal. The House did their thing. The Senate is doing their thing. And now President Trump called on Tuesday for shutting down the federal government if Congress does not crack down on illegal immigration, even as congressional negotiators closed in on a major budget deal that would send would set spending levels for 2 years and break the cycle of fiscal crisis that has bedeviled the nation's capital. On Tuesday night, the House approved a stopgap spending bill that would increase military spending through September. So, again, kicking it down the road, but okay. At least this one's not 6 weeks. While keeping funds flowing to the rest of the government for 6 weeks. And then the House measure is unlikely to pass the Senate, where Democrats insist that an increase in military funds be matched with additional domestic spending. And then the man who was tweeting all about how the big bad Democrats were going to shut down the government 7 weeks ago is now saying we should have a shutdown. I don't get it. Alan, how about you?
He said, I want a shutdown. He said, I want a shutdown. I mean, that is what is so extraordinary about this. The White House, of course, walked it back as quick as they could because they had worked very hard to make sure that the Democrats were blamed the last time. So now here's the president of the United States saying he wants one. You better believe this is bad news for him. What really caught my eye this morning, and I know we're going to talk about it, Joe, is I had been talking a little bit about the road to totalitarianism and fascism, and a couple of people, one, got angry. But really, that's what happens when you call the press the enemy of the people. That's what happens when you are doing the kinds of things that he is doing to shame immigrants in this country. And there's a lot more. But now, after all of that, comes what? He wants a military parade.
Yep.
You know what? One and one makes two.
Yep.
That's the way they always did it. That's the way it happened in Germany and in Spain and all these other places. That's the way that it happened.
Okay. Yeah. I really do want to talk about the parade because I just this story doesn't make sense to me. But let me go to Teresa on the budget of where we are. So even though we have, it seems like there's forward movement here. I mean, the headline in the Times today, as negotiators close in on a budget deal. Well, they're really not closing in on a budget deal, though, are they? Because it seems like the House and Senate are very far away.
Well, it appears that they may be close, and what's interesting to me is they seem to be doing it in spite of Trump, not with him and his team. In fact, they are leaving him out of it. So what's happening is that the House passed a bill last night to continue funding till March 23rd, and they, knowing full well that that bill is not going to make its way through the Senate. The Senate won't pass that bill, but budget bills have to originate in the House, so at least it gets the process going. And if, in fact, the Senate can reach this agreement with the House, the Democrats on the House side canceled their retreat. They were scheduled to be away. But if, in fact, they can do this big deal, then the Senate will pass that as a substitute to the bill that came over from the House, send it back to the House, the House will pass that. So that's how they, in theory, procedurally could get it done. The question is, what's in it? And it appears that there's the defense spending that the Senate Republicans want, and Democrats too, but also there's the non-discretionary, the other spending, the non-defense spending that the Democrats want. There is money for disaster aid that the people from Texas and California and Florida and Puerto Rico want. Now, you put that in there, you lose the Freedom Caucus folks, but because you have this non-defense spending, you pick up some Democrats right. in the House. So in theory, they could thread this needle. The thing that it absolutely doesn't have is anything on immigration and DACA. And it appears that the Democrats are willing to allow that to happen. So that's a long-winded way of saying it is possible that they could thread this needle. There's a number of things that, the other thing they want to tuck in there, which I think is the Republicans really want to do this, they need to raise the debt limit. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they want to vote on an individual bill to raise the debt limit. Mm-hmm. So if they can tuck that in there, if they can get a 2-year spending bill, this takes them past the elections and gives them, you know, takes a lot of pressure off of them.
Right. And I think that, you know, one of the questions is moving forward, aside from procedure, is how much common sense does this make, especially for the taxpayers, when you hear all these other proposals for things like a very costly military parade. At the same time, you're, you know, seeming favorable for a shutdown, which hurts our military folks by withholding their paychecks. So if I were from the, you know, an active duty member or a veteran right now, I'd really love to hear, if there are any listeners out there, please chime in, because I think it creates a really interesting predicament. And the same thing with DACA. We heard reports this morning reminding us that there are 10,000 DACA recipients who are military veterans. So if you're going to essentially deport all those people, what sense does that make with all this on the table?
Well, I don't think sense has ever come into the thinking of Trump. I mean, this is a man who doesn't value facts, doesn't value the truth, has devalued the presidency because of that. He has no moral center. And so he's just going to do what he wants to do. And if anybody doesn't think that this parade that he wants, this military show of force that he wants to do, is in response to seeing one in France,
Which took place on Bastille Day.
Right. But that's not it. This is about North Korea, little hands, and wanting to show that he's as big and has a big button.
But also, you know, I think that each of these stories is really, really important. The story about the memo, the story about the parade, his little show and tell yesterday on MS-13. They are all important, but that's master marketer Trump. He knows how to change the conversation. A parade is something, you know, you put that out there, people are busy with their lives, you know, that gets, you're for or against the military. You know, you can create this dynamic. You know, it just fuzzies up the conversation, when what we really need to be talking about is, well, what's in this budget bill, mm-hmm. right? We really need to be focused on is, where are we on the opioid crisis? Is there going to be enough funding for that? And what the heck is Kellyanne Conway doing, and why are they zero funding the drug czar at the same time they say they're for the opioid crisis? I mean, there's all sorts of policy stuff that's complicated. And Alan, I know you talk about this all the time. It's too down in the weeds. But those kinds of things, you throw them out. It's like the shiny object, the red meat. It gets people fixated, you know.
That's what he's been doing the entire time.
Right.
During his campaign and during the last year. That's all he ever does. And yes, we do need to talk about these issues, but we also need to recognize that we have a very dangerous person sitting within seconds of a nuclear disaster. And that's where we're going. And we're going, as Alan has said, down this road towards fascism, although I think it's possible. I think the importance of this show, this radio station, everyone, the media, everyone paying attention and speaking out, resisting, will make sure that that doesn't happen. But while, yeah, we do have to talk about the policy issues, and those, that's ultimately what's important, the rank and file, they respond to love, hate, fear, and hope.
No, no, I understand.
You know, and that's where, that's what he is. He's his red meat. That's
but don't you think it's interesting? I mean, I think it's interesting that McConnell, even though he is not speaking out against the fascism comment or anything that Trump's doing, they clearly seem to have isolated him and his negotiators and just said, okay, we're going to get down to the business of governing. And that's a switch.
It is.
They have clearly, if they cut this deal, they have decided we are going to, you know, you can have all that noise that's churning on cable TV, but we are going to go back to the business of governing. We can't do it with your people in the room. We're going to cut this deal. We're going to put it on your desk, and you're going to sign it. That
So my question to you, Teresa, is this. Let's assume that they come, pardon me, let's assume that they come up with what they're coming up with. What does the president do?
I mean, because he's so void of policy, I think he's forced to sign it because they go in and say to him, this is an election year. Our folks are out on a limb. You cannot saw it off. You know, they're going out on a limb. Some of them are going out on a limb because they're going to raise the debt ceiling. They've given them cover, but they're going to do it. Some are going out on a limb because they're not going to take as much, you know, money for the disaster bill. You know, you can go down the litany of it, but everybody's going to give up something. And I think they've just decided, Schumer and McConnell, to do a deal.
All right, we're going to have to take a break. We are going to go over to news, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I have a few follow-up questions, and we'll have letters as well. That next. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for the 7th of February. Very nice to have you with us on this day. It's starting to snow here in Albany, so I'm sure it's snowing where you are, and just be safe. And I think every school in the area pretty much is closed, so we're battening down, and through that process, we hope you enjoy the program.
From your Berkshire correspondent, Joe, I can only say it's snowing.
It's snowing.
It was snowing on my way. It just started on my way.
I'm looking out the window. Yeah, right.
I know David Gaskina just... Christina scared me this morning. I went back, got a shovel, put an extra coat in the car.
That stuff never leaves my car in the winter.
You know what?
Worried about Jen.
Through the spring.
You know what Ray Graff calls David Gaskina, don't you?
What?
A weather alarmist.
That's a new one.
I'm not confirming or denying.
David just gave us the eye.
It worked for me this morning. I tell you, I was all set to go and I went back.
I'm not confirming or denying that status. I'm merely stating that it was something that he has called. All right. Welcome back to the program. We have some letters. Let's go to those, and then we'll... And through that process, we'll talk more about these issues, about the budget and the parade and all of that. Well, Steve says, good morning. Good to hear you again. A military parade? Question mark. Oh, yes. To distract us from everything that hasn't been resolved in the 12 months before. Parades, circuses, and balloons for the kiddies. Yippee! Mm-hmm. Well, that's... It seems like it's more than that, right? I mean, it goes back to this whole thing of the pomp and the circumstance and wanting to go to England and have the chariot ride
wants,
and all of the...
Right. He just wants
the gold leaf and
to fet him 24/7, and that he and he's making up on some level for his own lack of military service.
Do you guys remember when Nixon started having the trumpets come out, you know, on the portico when he was, same sort of thing. When you're in trouble, there's nothing like a parade.
Yeah.
But but I think it's much more than that, Joe. I agree. I mean, I think what we're looking at over here is now this march towards totalitarianism. We have seen it again and again. Here's a man who goes on the TV and everything else and starts claiming that if the Democrats didn't clap for him. They right. are traitors. Traitors. Where else have you seen that?
Well, and then,
yes, please, please.
I want to know what you think. You know, they said it was a joke yesterday, but then I hear there's an ad about it. What do you think about this political ad about it? Have you
well,
seen it?
Well, frankly, I haven't seen it, but I can tell you it was no joke. It was no joke. And it is consistent with a guy who wants to be a strong man, whose mm-hmm. best friends are Duterte and all these other people who he is dealing with, and he seems to admire much more than people who believe in democratic processes.
So allow me to go out on a bit of a tangent here, but if you put all sure. of this together, I was struck by what Teresa said a moment ago. Of all of these stories are important. They all come together. But this story about the and again, we've been away for 2 days, so we're catching up on some stuff. But this whole thing about it being treasonous for sitting down.
Oh, God.
Many of the members who sat down were part of the Black and Puerto Rican caucus. Now, again, so that brings up the race issue with this president, which again seems to be paramount. And oh, by the way, did you hear what General Kelly said mm-hmm, yesterday? Mm-hmm. If they'll just get off their asses, mm-hmm. I believe was the direct quote.
And the lazy,
right?
Yeah,
and register. Right.
Oh, my goodness. So it seems to me, going to what Alan just said, that this is who the guy is, and this is what we're dealing with. But also, all of that comes together, and it's all related. And I don't know how you depoliticize that, but it seems like you have to depoliticize that if we are going to have any unity in the country. That the Senate, the Congress, the American people are going to have to say, oh, that's racist, that's wrong, and not feel that if they're saying that, they're siding with one political brand over the other.
I mean, it completely.
Have I left you speechless? I apologize.
Is there country before party?
Right. Yeah. That's right. It. That's what this is about. Is there? Does politics trump what I would consider patriotism, which is standing up for democracy and standing up for what's right? And you know, this man wants America to be white again. He's flailing against a demographic wave that's just not going to happen. I mean, this country is going to be majority-minority within the next generation or so. He is speaking to the people, that 30% who, you know, I read a story this morning about a high school outside of Cincinnati where there was a game going on and people were jeering black students and jeering Asian students. And, you know, there's just this unleashing of this ugly underbelly of the United States rooted in the Civil War, rooted in our slavery roots. Some people think it's just fine. And it's up to us to stand up and say the emperor has no clothes.
I think it's even more than, you know, unleashing too. I think it's affirming action. You know, if you look historically, president, a leader is a role model, is someone we're supposed to take cue from in terms of how we act. And you know, I think this administration has deeply challenged ethics, common courtesies, goodwill, despite what he said in his State of the Union address and about setting aside differences and about it's great to flaunt all the ticks in your checklist of things that's supposed to make you look good. But, actions speak louder than words, and you see no strong policies for protections, for supporting people, for improving schools, addressing our prison systems. It goes way deeper.
Do you remember when we were talking at the beginning of this administration and for the first several, or even during the campaign, that these were dog whistles? These were dog mm-hmm. whistles. These were symbols that were being set mm-hmm. off to people mm-hmm. who would understand them. We're not even doing that anymore. We're just blatantly being racist, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, Joe, you're right. But I do want to remind everybody that the way that this guy got elected president of the United States was with those dog whistles and with the red meat and the rest. And I know Teresa is right in discussing the substance of what is suffering, who's going to suffer and how it's going to happen, and children and everything else. But in the end, you got to come back to the fact that Donald Trump is all about Donald Trump, and his number one priority is getting reelected. And he cannot start to do the, quote, right thing right now, because if he does, he is not going to win a second time. So he's not going to do that. He's going to have to keep on throwing that red meat out there, and it's going to work for him or not work.
Alan, I agree that these are all the memo, very important story, pushing back against the parade, very important story. It's not that these aren't important stories. It's just that there has to be a way to counter message against those, because while he's throwing out all that red meat or dog whistles or whatever you want to call it, distractions, shiny objects, underneath that, there's a lot that's happening that we really also need to pay attention to. And you need that, you know, this is where Democratic messaging is so important. Mm-hmm. And I watched cable news the last couple of days. I hadn't in a while. I was more watching it online, and I could not believe the amount of attention. There's just think about the number of people in his administration who are in trouble right now.
And
think about, you know, again, opioid crisis, right? We know there's an opioid crisis, yet at the same time, they're dismantling the drug czar's office, which is the coordinating body for that, defunding.
And they put a racist in charge of the civil rights office in the Justice Department.
And
this opioid crisis, whatever money they're putting towards that, if it is any, they're taking it away from AIDS funding.
Right. And you have a flu epidemic. And you have, finally, they got somebody to run the Centers CDC. For Disease Control. And then she had to leave because of activity, you know, buying
ethics
problems, right? And you, okay, we have a big storm, NOAA, right? So the top five people, five slots at NOAA that does the weather and disaster stuff, they aren't filled yet. I mean, it just... on and on. KT McFarland, in any other world, there'd be incredible focus on the fact that KT McFarland, who was supposed to be the U.S. ambassador to Singapore, she had been in the White House. She had to leave. She goes to a Senate hearing. It appears she may have committed perjury because they've pulled back her nomination. You know, sort of on and on. A level of, you know, ethics issues, right, Libby? I mean...
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the level of ethics issues, the level of truth issues, the level of outright racism, homophobia, anti-Semitism. Let's not forget, you know, this is a man who said, well, there were honorable people on both sides of what happened in Charlottesville. There was no honor in what happened in Charlottesville. You know, more people have been killed in this country by white male terrorists who consider themselves Christian conservatives than by immigrants or terrorists this year. So let's look at, you know, if you want to look at the policy, you want to look at the numbers, let's look at those things and start having conversations about who is really a threat to our country.
Right. And look at FEMA. You know, here's another case where they did this contract with this person from Atlanta to provide meals for Puerto Rico.
Right.
So this one-person caterer gets a $156 million contract to provide 30 million meals. They finally had to cancel it when she'd only provided 50,000 when her target was 18.5 million.
And hadn't done much in the past either.
Yeah. No.
Jen, were you trying to get in there?
Oh, you know, I completely agree with the line, the list of things we're putting forth. And I think, you know, it is you know, responsibility of the media to step away from the quote-unquote emotional and dramatic news to, you know, push some of these issues to the forefront. I think we have to be mindful that we can't become desensitized. I know every single publication has focused at one point or another on narratives from the opioid crisis, but we can't forget those.
Can I ask you a question, Jen?
Sure.
As a very wonderful and accomplished reporter for the Berkshire Eagle, I'm wondering whether the rhetoric from the president about we're the enemy of the people, you know, the press is the enemy of the people, mm-hmm. whether you see any transference of that to the local level, where the newspaper may be taking a stance and getting it in the neck because of the encouragement from the president. I know it's not artfully worded, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Sure. I mean, yes and no. I think that historically there's been declining numbers when you look at the faith in the press. So I don't think this is an issue that's anything new, but I think it's definitely reinforced by the rhetoric. But at the same time, we have also personally, locally in the Berkshires, we've seen a groundswell of support mm-hmm. because there's such a clamor for truth, for seasoned reporters who can dig for that, for those who can go above the hype and the mire to bring really thoughtful stories about the community as it connects to what's happening in the region and the nation. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that support come in the forms of letters to donations. I think we're seeing a record number of donations. You look at, what happened with the New York Times yes. earlier, mm-hmm. Just after the election, and other publications that they're subscription numbers, hit a spike. And that's a good thing. I think there needs to be some more long-term support. I think there needs to be more communication, and just, as the community engagement editor, I'm always an advocate for being able to talk to people locally about the issues, what's going on in the nation and how it affects them, whether it's the latest in tax reform, whether it's DACA, whether it's opioids. And then I think it's also giving people the tools to hold the legislators accountable so they can hold people like the president and his administration accountable to, serving the people.
One last thing, and that is that, Joe, I know you got to get to a break, but Joe Biden is out this morning big time mm-hmm. after Trump. Right. And I think it makes a great deal of sense, basically calling the guy a joke, which we know he's not, and saying that Bo, his son, who he lost, wanted him to continue in public life. And that, to me, means he's going for it.
I got a fundraising appeal from them yesterday from his new group.
I was interested in, Senator Flake, a Republican, went on the Senate floor yesterday and spoke against the treason comments of the president. And Alan, I would interest in your view on this.
Can we hold that? I just have to take a break. We're going to be late. So let me do that. That's all right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. We'll talk about that. We have letters, more. Boom, 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 boom. We'll get it all done. I promise. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. We have a lot to talk about, a lot going on, and we have letters as well. We were just, before we went to break, you were asking a question about Senator Flake.
I was just struck by Senator Flake gave an impassioned speech on the Senate floor, Republican senator, about the treason comment and that it was not a joke. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders from the White House podium really went after him, denigrated him, ridiculed him. And I was struck by, I think it was Ronald Reagan's birthday, and Ronald Reagan famously said, thou shalt not attack another mm-hmm. fellow Republican. Mm-hmm. So, Alan, I was just wondering what you thought about, can you remember a press secretary going after a senator of her own party like that?
Well, you had better believe, of course, that, Teresa, that she is not much more in this case than a puppet on Trump's right. lap. I mean, he's pulling the string in the back of her head.
Yeah, she was
and
reading.
He must be furious at what Flake said. And he must understand that Flake is setting himself up to be president of the United States.
No kidding.
And that this is something that he's not about to tolerate.
We have letters. Let me get to some of those before we take a news break at the top of the hour. Gene says, the news about Trump wanting his military parade made my blood run cold. May I respectfully mm-hmm. suggest a simultaneous sanity march the same day? Take the women's march and build from there. Oh, and by the way, sign me up, says Gene. Chester says, put the cost of a military parade toward funding the VA and supporting our veterans. That way, funds go to the veterans and not to Donald Trump's ego. The president is not a veteran and deserves not a penny. I know this is another part of the story, but the cost, if they really go ahead with it,
it's really expensive.
It's really expensive. And And for what?
Right. For an ego. Assuaging an ego.
And EJ-
See, I think it's much worse than that. I think it is another symbol about the way in which this president wants to decimate our Constitution. In other words, I think this is a bringing the military, you know, his chief of staff is military, his top people are military, a parade which is symbolic of everything we saw in Nuremberg and everything else. It's very scary.
So let me ask a question. Does the Republican Congress and the Republican Senate, whether they have to vote on it or not, regardless, do they support it?
Not so far.
Everything else, do they come around and say, oh, well, you know, we'll put up with that because
we
crazy
get
Uncle
what,
Donald
right,
wants
and
this, and then we can get what we need later on.
Right.
Well, it's not only later on, I may just say. Everything has to do with their own re-elections.
Right.
Their
right.
own re-elections. They know if they do the right thing, the Democrats are going to win big time. And so the last thing they can do is put everything up, their body up against the door to make sure it stays closed. And that's what's so disgusting about what's going on here.
Well, I think it's Secretary Mattis, you know, E.J. Dionne tweeted out suggesting that he convinced the president to use the money to fund scholarships for wounded warriors or families of the fallen. But not only is it expensive, they were talking about the fact that some of this equipment that he wants to bring in, well, literally, it's not intended to be used on streets and it will turn them up and such. But this is where messaging will matter, because if the Democrats and some Republicans don't get out ahead of this, then it'll create the dynamic that you're for or against the military. Oh, that you don't respect the military. When in fact, if you do respect the military, you will understand that this is a distraction for them and that this is costly for them. And that, in fact, if you want to honor the military, you do it on Memorial Day, you do it on Veterans Day, you do it in passing a budget that funds them properly and protects them.
I was going to say, you do that by preventing a government shutdown that withholds their paychecks, according to all my military families and friends in my network. That's the biggest concern. Pay attention to that. Listen to them.
I heard a whole panel of both conservative and less conservative, let's say, military leaders on a couple of panels last night, and they were all saying, you know, generally in the military,
we don't
like parades.
Right.
Right.
They don't.
It's not good for their
morale. We don't want to do that.
It's not what we do. I mean, it really isn't what
not
we do.
Not in America.
But going back to Alan's point about the elections and all this stuff, I just want to make let people know that there was a Democrat in Missouri who flipped a deep red House seat yesterday, a state House seat. But, you know, I mean, this was a there was a Democrat who flipped a deep red Missouri House or assembly seat in Missouri yesterday. And, you know, it was in a district that voted overwhelmingly for Trump. So I, you know, these other seats that have gone from red to blue, the undermining, and I know we'll get to this, of the economy, what's happening on the stock market and on Wall Street right now, you know, this sets things up for the Republicans not to be able to message all that well going into this November.
Yeah, you know, Libby, that's such an interesting point, but if you're a red and I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but if you're a red senator, in other words, if you're a deep Republican senator and you see what you've just announced having happened, and you know the train is coming down the track, what do you do? Right? What do you do? Do you say, okay, I'm going to be even more righteously red? Or am I going to say, all right, it's time to start criticizing this president to save myself?
That's right.
I think the reason I'm so intrigued by the possibility of McConnell and Schumer cutting this deal is, Alan, I think that they're signaling now what you do, that you, you know, you work in a bipartisan way, you cut a deal, you put the money back, you don't accept the Trump budget that has a 31% cut in the Health and Human Services and you know, that guts all these agencies. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that happened in the last few days around this memo is that the Nunes his opponent in California has raised, I think it's over $400,000 in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And was somebody who was a long shot and now is a possibility. And Paul Ryan's opponent in Wisconsin.
Randy Bryce.
He's great. Yeah, he's fantastic. He asked everyone to send in $1.50. And in the, like, 24 hours, he'd raise huge amounts of money with people just because of the tweet that Paul Ryan tweeted about the dollar.
I want to get to a couple of letters. David says, Trump wanted a military parade for his inauguration. He wants to look out from the reviewing stand as tanks, missiles, and troops parade before him. This is not honoring our military. This is how fascist strongmen preen. Lillian says, a military parade? This military spouse finds that mere idea abhorrent. Also abhorrent, leaving DACA recipients behind.
Thank you for your service.
Isha writes, hi there. Wondering how veterans can be denied a path to citizenship no matter if they are DACA eligible or not. Any insight into how non-citizens can be members of our armed forces in the first place and why they aren't somehow fast-tracked to at least legal status in exchange for their service to our country? What is the history of this? Also, military parade? Eek. Just like North Korea, my missile is bigger than your missile.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just a quick statement on that, too. I mean, that history goes back to slavery and sort of the, you know, even to the Civil War, where there are opportunities for people to participate in our military on either side in exchange for, you know, they weren't free citizens back then, but that was an acceptable opportunity.
And it was supposed to be a path to citizenship, and that's been the big lie.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little? I mean, my mind is so weak, but I do remember. But I do remember that was the deal. You come in, and it's a fast track to citizenship. Do you know that was that ever in the law? Or does anybody remember that? Because I don't.
It's part of DACA legislation, and also if you look at the Republican Succeed Act, that's also language that's in there as showing your can act like a good citizen by taking part in making these contributions to society, whether it's employment through the military or another job. But that's sort of one of the benchmarks on that pathway.
All right. Ray Graff is standing by with news. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Many more topics to discuss. We have more letters as well. We welcome you to write us. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post they make up the panel this morning, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Let me run back to some letters, and then we'll move on to some other subjects. Rogers says, unless he plans to have a parade on I-95, good luck with that, because the roadbeds and city streets are not designed to accommodate the weight of tanks. Zach says, good morning, panel. I really disagree with the framing that we have to take politics out of the discussion about race. Standing up against white supremacy is a political stand. It might not be partisan, but it is political. We need more people who are politicized and active around this issue, not fewer. I'm not sure I agree with that, but okay.
I think from a policy standpoint, again, coming from my expertise with schools, a lot of education policies were put forth to create and generate more equity when you look at the statistics of students of color failing. So I think in that respect, politics is welcome, but I think using sometimes race as a political football is not the best of intentions.
Well, and I still think there's right and wrong.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Using race for political intentions in terms of how Trump has used it is not the way it should be done. Talking about race within a political context, talking about racism and how it has shaped our country and doing things politically to correct that is...
As a human rights issue, absolutely.
Right, is within the political context and should be.
Linda writes, dear panel, so glad you're back. Congratulations on the fun drive. General Kelly is frightening. I'm appalled to think that he is a graduate of Georgetown School of Foreign Service. Is there anyone there to protect us? Yesterday, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly said some immigrants may have been, quote, too afraid or, quote, too lazy to sign up for the Obama-era program that offered protection from deportation. There are 690,000 official DACA registrants, and the president sent over what amounts to be 2.5 times that number to 1.8 million, he said. The differences between 690,000 and 1.8 million were the people that some would say were too afraid to sign up, others would say were too lazy to get off their asses, but they didn't sign up.
Well,
we've talked about that already. Yeah. It's just disgusting, and I am sure he was carrying the mail for the president. Hey, Joe, would it be all right for me to read a letter from Richard, who says, panel, I was inspired by Senator Tammy Duckworth's response to President Trump calling Dems traitors and treasonous. Senator Duckworth, an Iraq combat veteran, refers to President Donald Trump as cadet bone spurs, referencing Donald Trump successfully getting a draft deferment due to his claim to have bone spurs. Senator Duckworth, by making an unflattering nickname for Trump, is using Trump's favorite tactic against him. From Richard. I thought that was an extraordinary letter.
Yeah, and she, I mean, her comments have been extraordinary over the past several days on this. It's
she gave it all up, all up for the United States.
Okay, let's move on to another topic of the day. We have talked a lot about what's going on in Washington, and I would like to talk about the Dow. That obviously has been a huge story this week, as I mentioned, with us being out on Monday and Tuesday with the fun drive. All of this happens as the U.S. stock market bounced up and down over the last several days. It bounced up in the final hour of trading Tuesday after a rocky morning that saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average dip into correction territory. After a big swing of more than 1,168 points during the day, the Dow landed up 2.3% or 567 points to finish at 24,913. Still, the blue chip index is off to its worst month in 8 years. Volatility is back, said Jamie Cox of Harris Financial Group. It's not back in a big way, but it's going to be dormant like it was in 2000, and or it's not going to be dormant like it was in 2017, and that is the real story. We saw record losses on Monday, some of the biggest one-day losses that we have seen. And at this point, right now, as of this moment, the Dow is up 185. But so it started low, but is now at 185.
If anybody didn't think that this was going to happen, you know, they don't understand how this works. I mean, we couldn't keep going the way we were going, up and up and up, without there being some mid-course adjustment. But not only that, it's a bubble, and bubbles do burst. Although I found it really interesting that Sean Hannity blamed it on Obama. I thought that was fascinating.
And what would you have expected?
Yeah, I know, but I'm like, really? I mean, can they not come up with anything more original than that, you know? But, you know, look, this is staying at 26,000 when I remember, you know, last year, the year before, when we thought getting to 19,000 was a phenomenal feat. Well, just to have to ride this out, and hopefully not too many people like us who do invest and our retirements are there won't get too hurt in time for us to be able to actually retire. You have a little more time.
I was going to say.
Yeah, Jen's got a little more time, but I don't have much more.
I work for a newspaper.
Right. Yes, but I'm in journalism, yeah, so what do you expect?
So you'll never retire. Is that what you're telling
Pretty
us?
Much.
Yeah, I know. I'm the same way.
Of course, the closer you get to the end of the game, the more you could get caught if you know mm-hmm. what I mean.
Well, mm-hmm. I think that's the thing. You know, I've spent a lot of this week working on stories looking at financial education for young people. And what the echo that I keep hearing is that the best benefit that young people have, you know, high school, early college students, is that they have time. But if you're of retirement age and you're looking to benefit from all you've been investing in right now,
sure.
you're on the phone seeking therapy from your financial mm-hmm. advisor about what to do. And that can be really scary, you know. Market volatility is nothing new in the history of the marketplace, but I think it's the timing that has people on age. And also, I think people are trying to understand what is influencing it, whether it'll be long term, short term, and ultimately what can help bring it back up.
Right. I mean, I think I'm by no means, you know, an expert in this, not a, you know, what's the opposite of that. But from reading and listening, clearly, as everyone says over and over again, the market is not the economy. But the market does reflect underlying strengths and weaknesses in the economy. And one thing that a couple of things that people have been talking about a lot in the last few days is, you know, you had this announcement on February 3rd that the government's set to borrow nearly $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. This is up 84% in the last year, mm-hmm. highest in 6 years. And also that they're, you know, the experts are questioning this tax package. You know, I question it because of its inequities, a mm-hmm. great transfer of wealth to the top 1%. But that it was it the right thing to have this stimulus when, in fact, unemployment was going down. Mm-hmm. That was under the Obama economy. There was a downward trend on unemployment. And so has this, in fact, perhaps triggered inflation, as some worried that it would? And that's so.
And the decline of the dollar, Teresa.
Well, that's a big issue.
That's huge.
And the trade deficit with China. Sorry.
I was going to say, absolutely, the trade deficit with China, where you have the president saying we're looking to rein that in, when I think our deficit is at a peak right now. And then putting it in context with a lot of other financial issues that are happening globally. You know, we just got off the tail end of the Davos summit. And, you know, what did we learn from there? And, you know, there's not only trouble here, but in the Eurozone. You know, we still have the Brexit saga to contend with, what's happening in China, you know, in our conflict areas and the Middle East and Asia.
And the U.S. essentially walking away from mm-hmm. the TPP negotiations, walking away from NAFTA. It's really hurting our dairy
farmers.
And then
criticizing UN spending.
So what I really want to have some political scientist do is to figure out, and Teresa, I'd be very interested in your answer to this, because you're always talking about, you're in the weeds, you're talking about healthcare, you're talking about education, the rest of it. I want to know, and now we're talking about all these things that are happening in the market. I want to know, there's got to be some kind of index that tells us, of all the things that are out there, what percent of that makes sense to the people of the United States who have to vote eventually. You know what I'm saying here? So in other words, I'd like to know, I think you're right, Teresa.
Well, it's called the VIX. It's the fear index. And that's what happened on Monday. The fear index went above 50. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, exactly. Well, exactly. But it's even worse than that. It's even more important than that. So you, for example, talk specifically about how effective the Democrats were when they were talking about health care, and that people really cared about their own health care. And so there had to be a retreat on the part of those people who were trying to deal with it in an adverse kind of way. But then when you talk about some of the other subjects, which is so important, there's almost not a flick on the register. Are you following what I'm saying? Isn't it inarticulately as it is?
Well, I think that we do need to have, I think we are missing a voice like Senator Wellstone or Senator Kennedy, and other people are beginning to find their voices. You know, I think like Senator Duckworth and others, but I mean, look at they've come together.
But that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking how do we register the message by seeing what people react to? Because after all, that's what the Democrats have to do, right?
Well, I would package it as if you look at the cost of the cascade of corruption. Because if you look at the with all these corruption situations, whether it's at the CDC in the midst of a flu epidemic, corruption, you know, at the anyway, I don't want to take up too much time, but the whole litany that I talked about earlier, each one of those, opioid crisis, the you know, the disaster aid, the FEMA, you know, corruption at FEMA, each one of these has a human cost to people's lives, whether it's disaster aid not being delivered, opioid crisis not being addressed,
okay,
flu not being dealt with. This cascade of corruption has a cost.
Okay, you're right, of course. But suppose we were to put this on the what we could only call the Chartok scale right now, what we only could call the Chartok scale, and say, all right, all the things you just mentioned, the corruption, this and that, which of it registers with the American people?
Well,
that's what I think is so important. Now, you're arguing it should. I'm arguing, hey, if the Democrats are going to create a message, they better do it based on what people care about.
Silence comes over the crowd.
Well, I could keep going, but I didn't want to, you know.
No.
Libby, you.
Yeah, no, I, you know.
I'm yapping.
It's okay. Go right ahead.
Well, let's go back to health care. There's this big package, health care package, that's been worked out, except for what's the price of the health care package. So there's going to be funding. If they get this through, there's going to be funding for community health centers. There's going to be funding for disproportionate share hospitals, meaning, you know, it'll keep the hospitals solvent as they deal with more and more people who don't have health insurance. But the price tag is that the Republicans want to take the money out of the ACA, the Obamacare prevention pool of funding, yet again. So that's the kind of thing that's happening while everybody's talking about Trump's military parade.
And when they take money away from ACA to give it to the health centers, it's a zero-sum game.
Right. Meanwhile,
Back at the ranch.
Oh, Angela Merkel. That's a good thing. She formed a government. Meanwhile,
that wasn't where I was going.
Sorry. Meanwhile.
That was not what I was going to mention.
Oh, were you going to talk about your Philadelphia?
No, I was going to talk about the rocket.
SpaceX.
Oh.
And Elon Musk being an immigrant from South Africa.
Exactly. Yeah, wasn't he undocumented for a while?
I guess no one told Trump because he tweeted about him today.
From the same pad where NASA launched rockets that carried astronauts to the moon, a big new American rocket arced into space on Tuesday, but this time NASA was not involved. The rocket, the Falcon Heavy, was built by SpaceX, the company founded and run by billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk. The launch of the turbocharged version of the workhorse Falcon 9 rocket, which has been carrying cargo to space for years, marks an important milestone in spaceflight. The first time a rocket this powerful has been sent into space by a private company rather than a government space agency.
I watched the video this morning, and what I found so fascinating was that the thruster rockets came back down to Earth and didn't crash, and they landed so nicely. One of them did crash in the ocean because they didn't get something right. But I thought that was fascinating because usually this stuff, when I was a kid, you'd watch, you know, the rockets go off and they'd all just end up in the ocean. And the capsule would then go around the Earth or go to the moon and then come back. But
this is a more sustainable rocket.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. This is more sustainable. And I love the fact that he's got a little red roadster attached and people are driving. He's got a dummy driving. The idea of wanting to go spend time on Mars and going to spend time on the moon, I think, are for the younger generations. But, it's a great way to move things forward.
Meanwhile, because I know Joe's going to get us out of here soon.
Right.
Meanwhile, the so-called trial of the century, where Joe Piccoco in New York State and Todd Howe and all of the others are out there, gets no attention from us because Trump has sucked all the air out of the room with this
stuff. No kidding.
The luckiest guy in the world here is Andrew Cuomo.
Well,
because
We'll certainly talk about it as the trial goes on. There were some really good statements over the last couple of days. And the other story I wanted to mention.
And by the way, I don't think it's going well for the prosecution, but that's another story. Go ahead.
Then the other story, of course, is we'll find out more about the Berkshire Museum this week, right?
Yes.
Indeed.
On Friday. We're
going to find out because apparently the Attorney General has cut a deal or is cutting a deal with the museum people. And we have no idea what's in that deal. And that's going to be whether the Rockwells get sold, whether they don't get sold, whether some things get sold, well, other things don't get sold. It's very disturbing to many people who really want those treasures kept in the Berkshires.
We are out of time, but I thank you. We'll certainly know more by next week. My thanks to Alan Chartok. Jen, you drive carefully, okay?
I will indeed.
Thank
I
you
will
very
tweet it out
much.
When I get home safely.
Be good. Yes, please, tweet. We all need to know. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.